A group date differs from a traditional date in several ways. First, there are no special relationships in the group. No particular girl and boy are together all the time. Second, the group date may occur on a weekend, but it may not be planned in advance. A group of young people may decide on Saturday afternoon that they want to spend Saturday evening together. They may all decide to go to a movie or to some other event. On a group date, no one is paired with anyone else. As a result, every person pays for his or her own expenses. This means that the girls must pay for themselves. They must pay their own admission for the movies, for a cup of coffee, or for anything else that costs money during the date. Many young people find the group date to be a great deal of fun. The young men on a group date are under no pressure. They do not have to be with any particular girl during the evening. They do not have to pay for anyone but themselves. They do not have to be especially polite or formal during the date. Everyone can relax and have a good time. Group dates may lead to serious relationships for some members of the group. Maybe a girl and boy on a group date find that they have a lot in common and enjoy being together. They may spend more time together with the group and with each other. But usually, everyone on a group date is just interested in a good time. No one worries about a serious relationship. The group date may be good for very young people. They may not know what kind of person they like. They may like to spend their time with many different people. But it also does not give young people a chance to have a serious relationship. A serious relationship can help a young person in many ways. A person may learn what is good and what is bad about a serious relationship. Usually, in dating, young people find out what kind of person they would like to marry. If a young person always goes on group dates, there is no chance to find out. As we can see, group dates have their good points and their drawbacks. The group date is very different from the traditional date, don't you think? Young people in the United States today enjoy both of these types of relationships. Traditional dating relationships give young people a chance to get to know one another quite well. Group dates give young people a chance to get to know many other young people and to have a more relaxed evening. Both kinds of dates have their good points. The group date is a relatively new idea among young people. It seems to be popular for the reasons described here.
5. Courtship customs. Did you know that most British couples first meet at a dance? That in some parts of Africa, men pay for their wives with cows? That in Germany, you can advertise for a partner on television? That in Britain, girls can propose in leap year, 1976, 1980, and every fourth year following. That in the USA, boys and girls start dating very young as 12. 6. Marriage. east and west. I believe, said Dr. Samuel Johnson in the 18th century, that marriages would in general be as happy, and often more so, if they were all made by the Lord Chancellor, upon a due consideration of the characters and circumstances, without the partners having any choice in the matter. We are bound to acknowledge, after a careful study of the methods of mate selection in the East and West, that the great Dr. Johnson was probably perfectly right. From one extreme to the other, four patterns of mate selection may be distinguished. 1. Selection by the parents, the young people themselves not consulted. This is the traditional method employed in the East. When the choice is carefully and wisely made, it is usually a good one. But it is open to the grave errors caused by ignorance and exploitation. 2. Selection by the parents, but the young people consulted. This is an improvement on the first method, provided the young people are allowed to make the final decision. In some communities, though they are formally consulted, they are expected to accept the choice made for them, and have no real freedom to express their minds. 3. Selection by the young people, but parental approval necessary. This pattern exhibits at least two forms. The strictest is the one in which no action may be taken by the young people until they have been given parental permission to proceed. A good example is the early American Quaker father in the 18th century, who was approached by a neighbor's son, John, asking his permission to court his daughter, Sarah. Unless John was approved by Sarah's father in the first place, no further step could be taken. But even if her father approved of John, Sarah still had the right to refuse him. The other variation is where Sarah could encourage John's attentions without seeking her father's permission. But if she and John became serious, her father's approval was essential before marriage could take place. If he used his veto, she had to give up John, or elope. 4. Selection by the young people, the parents not consulted. This is the method which is becoming widespread in the West today. The couple may be living away from home, and unable to consult their parents. But even when the parents are formally consulted, all too often, their agreement is a mere formality. They know that, even if they raise objections, the marriage is likely to take place anyway. Which of these methods is most desirable? We would reject the first. Even if it is efficient, we believe it denies to young people a freedom that should be theirs by right. This is the position being widely adopted in the East today. We would also reject the last. Young people should not be dominated by their parents in this matter, but neither should their parents be left entirely out of the picture. The experience of parents can often correct and restrain the headstrong and distorted choices of inexperienced youth. The kind of freedom young people in the West today are demanding is unreasonable and undesirable in their own best interests. The desirable ideal, we believe, is a cooperative selection by young people and parents together. This may not always be easily achieved, but it is worth the effort that may be needed. It creates unity in the family. It balances out the intense feelings of youth against the detached judgment of more mature experience. It offers, we believe, the best basis for successful marriages, especially if backed by scientific knowledge accumulated by study and research. At the present time, the East is moving steadily towards the ideal of cooperation between parents and young people. But the West is moving further away from it, as young people increasingly ignore their parents' opinions. However, there is some compensation in the fact that the results of study and research concerning the criteria of good mate selection are being made available increasingly to Western youth.
7. Marry. For what? I'm afraid it is in the nature of an agony aunt's job that she is more concerned with failures than with triumphs. Nevertheless, these past years, I've also noticed something of the pattern that leads to success in married life. I've seen, for instance, that making a marriage work begins long before making a marriage. It begins with a girl who thinks less about marriage than girls have traditionally done, and more about herself in relationship to work and to her community. The very first trick to a happy marriage is to become a person of independence and pride, who does not imagine a husband is necessary to make her magically complete. Whenever I get a letter from a woman who says she cannot live without the man who is breaking her heart, I am compelled to tell her that successful partnerships are not between those who cannot live without each other, but between those who can live with each other. There is no room, even in daydreams, for the stupid idea that there is on earth only one mate intended for another. To my surprise, I have found this antique misconception is still alive, and it creates a lazy superstition that has caused more than one marriage to fail. How can anyone who believes her union was meant to be not equally believe it was not meant to be at the first sign of trouble? Whether or not a marriage was meant to be is beside the point. It is, and therefore it requires patience and protection. Passion is great outside marriage, but not so hot inside it. So why do we marry? For love? Oh, yes. Friendship? Certainly. Children? Why not? Money? Dodgy. Fun? Never. For most young people, and a lot of older ones, marriage is the first adult commitment, and if it is to succeed, it must be undertaken in an adult way. It isn't a bad idea for engaged couples to write out the sort of contract any other working partnership would demand, specifying how many children they want to have and when, where they will live, how they will divide household duties, which in-laws might become liabilities, and what to do about them, how much money will be coming in, as well as precisely how it will go out. I don't pretend any couple would abide by such a contract, but simply in drawing it up, they would find out a great deal about each other's unromantic expectations. For these, not sex or fidelity or love, are the real marriage wreckers. It is alarming, for instance, how many women race into a lifelong contract with a man whose income and earning power they do not know. Do they still expect Daddy to find out for them? Of course, there is only one way to treat any problem inside marriage, sexual or otherwise, and it is the way to treat all the other problems. Talk to each other. But how many times has a woman written to me, a complete stranger, of a deep misery that she could not tell her husband, or that she failed even to catch his attention? There must arrive an ugly moment between every husband and wife. Maybe it's a quarrel, or a disappointment, or a hurt. And if that moment drops without discussion, and sinks into brooding or resentment, then it will be the seed that comes in the end to bear bitter fruit. Admittedly, it is largely women who write to me, and I do see marriage from a woman's point of view. But in this freezing of communication, I think it is often men who are the culprits. Men must talk about their feelings, and men must respect the validity of women's feelings, or their marriages become just a way of getting their shirts ironed. When agony aunts like me talk about working at a marriage, listening is what we mean. Listening is hard work, especially when it is to something we would rather not hear. There is no such thing as a marriage of convenience. Marriage is a cumbersome, inconvenient alliance, but it is the only way we have of making families, and therefore anyone who undertakes it has a responsibility to it. Part of the wife's responsibility is never, never to expect more from us than she expects from herself.
Lesson 18. Should women be treated the same as men? Text. For women, there is a long way to go. 1/3 of the people at work in Britain are women. By 1975, they will, by law, be on a footing of equal pay with men. Their prospects of reaching the top, however, are still far from equal. A recently published study called Women in Top Jobs examines why this should be so. For the purposes of this study, 4 researchers, 2 men and 2 women, chose women in top management in 2 business organizations, and women in senior jobs in the BBC and the civil service. In their findings, they found that although there are conventional and entrenched attitudes on both sides, there is a widespread awareness that no society can afford not to utilize ability. The studies confirm that there is no basic difference between the standards and quality of work performance of women who have reached top jobs and those of men in similar positions. Nevertheless, there emerged some distinctive factors in the performance of women in top jobs. Women were less interested in empire building, in office politics, in status symbols. They are likely to be less forceful and competitive than men. In the past, women tended to assume they would be overtaken by men in the race to the top. However, today's young women are far less philosophical about their status and are more aggressive in their resentment at being treated as in some way inferior to men. On the other hand, since lack of drive is one of the criticisms levelled against women, perhaps this aggression is a positive advantage. Some young women, though, find it very difficult to come to terms with the feeling that characteristics of authority, which are acceptable in men, are often not acceptable in women. A reason often advanced for women failing to reach the top is their desire for balance between work and a life outside work. Employers know this and tend, when a woman with young children applies for promotion, to treat the fact that she has young children as an important factor and, given the choice, are more likely to give promotion to a man than to her. What about women whose children are almost grown up? Well, the writers of the study recommend a much more positive approach by employers to women who want to return to their careers after their children are off their hands.
2. Read. Read the following passages. Underline the important viewpoints while reading. 1. What Women's Lib is about. Women's Lib is short for the Women's Liberation Movement, which got its name in America some years ago. Its supporters demand their freedom and equality with men. In this dialogue, Sheila believes in Women's Lib, while Harry has his doubts. I've never understood what this Women's Lib business is all about. I can understand women in some countries struggling for their rights. But it strikes me that here in Britain, women have already got as much freedom as they could possibly want. They've got the vote. They can go to university. They can compete with men in the professions on equal terms.
Rubbish! You're fooling yourself. How many women members of Parliament are there? About 30 out of 635. How many women company directors? How many trade union leaders? How many judges?
Not many, I agree. But why is that? Maybe their talents don't lie in those directions. Perhaps they prefer to be housewives.
Prefer to be housewives? You can't have any idea what it's like when you've been married 15 years and you've cleaned a house every day. Then your husband and kids come along and mess it all up again. Can you imagine the monotony, the boredom, the frustration?
Oh, yes, I can imagine it easily enough. But don't forget that a lot of men have equally boring jobs and less freedom to do them their own way. But that's beside the point. The real point is that most housewives, in my experience, are content to be housewives. Take my wife Jane, for example. She's not bored or frustrated. She finds her life quite satisfying. She cleans, cooks, gardens.
Oh, I'm aware of that. That's because, over the centuries, men have trained and educated women to consider themselves inferior and to accept their position. It isn't just the men who are prejudiced against the women. The women have become prejudiced against themselves. They believe they really are inferior.
You mean they've been conditioned to accept an inferior position?
Exactly. They've been brainwashed. It's the job of the Women's Lib movement to open their eyes to the way they have been fooled and dominated and exploited all these years.
So you want to take all these nice, contented women and make them discontent and rebellious.
Right.
I see. Well, I don't accept that the present system is the result of conditioning or brainwashing at all. It's the natural biological function of a woman first to bring children into the world and then to bring them up. That is how the animals do it. In the Stone Age, when we were cavemen, the woman stayed at home in the cave, and the men, being stronger and braver, went out to hunt. Now, the men go out and earn money instead. The women's lib movement denies women her natural function. I'm not saying that women's function is necessarily inferior, but I am saying that it's not the same.
So if something happened in the Stone Age, it was natural, and so it would be perfectly right and proper and natural to go and do it now. I suppose if a man thinks he wants a woman, all he has to do is go out and knock one on the head with his club and drag her home by the hair, or maybe swap her with his pal for a couple of tiger skins.
Don't be silly. We've grown out of that sort of barbarity.
I should jolly well hope so, too. Anyway, all this Stone Age stuff is a myth made up by men. For all we know, Stone Age women were the top dogs.
All right. Let's drop the Stone Age. Let's come down to the modern British family. I suppose you want to abolish it.
No, but I want to reorganize it. I believe that the housework and the bringing up of the children should be shared equally.
How? The husband should wash up, presumably.
Of course.
Well, I do that at my house. And I fill up the stove and mow the lawn and dig the garden.
Naturally. Those are men's jobs anyway.
Oh, I didn't think you believed in men's jobs and women's jobs. Anyway, I do quite a lot of the shopping.
Fancy that.
And in my time, I've bathed a few babies.
And changed nappies?
Both changed them and washed them.
Well, all I can say is you must be pretty unusual. My husband's never touched a nappy in his life.
I wouldn't say it was all that unusual. There are plenty of men in England who do the same as I do. Maybe that's why our wives are so satisfied. Now suppose we all did the same, and there were enough nursery schools and so on, and all the women who wanted to work could do so. What would you say to that?
Well...
Now suppose I was to stay at home and do all the housework and look after the children while my wife went out to work. What would you think about that?
I'd approve of it.
And you'd be willing for her to do any job at all?
Anything she was strong enough to do.
Good. Now, sometime last century, a law was passed making it illegal for women to work down the coal mines. You would like that law abolished?
Certainly.
I hope you won't want men to open doors for you and give up their seats in the bus for you.
Of course not, as long as I'm fit.
In fact, in return for equality, you would give up all the special allowances formerly made for the so-called weaker sex.
If I'm going to be logical, yes.
Well, if women are going to be logical, that will be progress.